G'day, it's Daniel Harford. Welcome to the Best of the Breakfast Club on RSN 927. It was jam-packed. Check it out.
Whitey, good morning.
Good morning. How are you today?
Going great. How could you not be?
That's
Friday.
Good. Well, it is. It is absolutely Friday. It's a big day in the world of sport because we know that obviously the US Open is going on in America at the moment. But while there's all this chaos in America, there is also, it's probably one of the biggest days in the history of American sport.
Why is that?
Because almost every sport possible, professional sport possible, is being played at the same time. Today opens the NFL season, but you've also got basketball playoffs, you've got the baseball season going on, Major League Soccer's happening. That's just to name a few, but it's very rare for you to have a situation where all three big sports are playing at the same time. It's happening today, but the sort of the extra layer is it's NBA playoffs as opposed to just NBA regular season games, which would happen in October as well. So
right.
It's exciting. It's good.
It's exciting for India sport, your American sport. You're having a feast
well,
today.
I know it's not really your thing, but I know it's Rama's thing.
Adam Romanaskis is who you're referring to. He's a Bombers champion, and these days he's manager to the Stars, fleecing clubs left, right, and centre. That's what he does. And he joins us on a Friday morning. Good morning, Rama.
Very good morning. Yes, it is. It is exciting. I saw that this morning when I was flicking through the ESPN app that all the major American sports are in competition today. So if that's your thing, you're going to have a great day on the couch. I'm looking forward to the NFL, seeing Patrick Mahomes play and how good he is. And I'm looking forward to the NBA and seeing LeBron and James Harden go at it again today in the playoffs. So they will probably be my two choices of sport at some stage today.
Because we've got the Super Bowl champs opening proceedings, haven't we?
Yeah.
With Patrick Mahomes and the Texans. Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah, against the Texans today.
Right. Okay. Well, there's lots of sport to get your teeth into if that's your thing on that side of the world, and you're into the US side of things, which a lot of people are, aren't they? They're really into that sort of stuff.
Oh, it's amazing now how, particularly the younger generation, they're really into it now. Obviously, you follow so many athletes on Instagram and Twitter, and a lot of them are so active. It's so easily accessible now to watch games, whether it's at home on Foxtel or KO or however you get the American sports. So it is very easy, and it's probably more mainstream than it's ever been before to how easy it is to access.
Yes, that is true. That is true. And as you said, Whitey, there's also, whilst there is regulation sort of sport, we've got the playoffs in the NBA, but also the US Open, the first round of the US Open coming up as well. Wing Foot, is that where it is?
Wing Foot next week, which is one of the more famous golf courses in the world, let alone in America. Obviously, the US Open coming to a climax as well in the tennis. So, it's not normal, is it? Because, so many of these events don't have any fans or anything like that, and it's still happening with the backdrop of what's going on in America at the moment, probably more intense than any other country, at least in the Western world. But I think it does help, and we've experienced that here in Australia, that the fact that racing's continued throughout, the fact that we've got ourselves through a football season, it's been strange and all that sort of thing, but it does help make the weeks go by just that little bit quicker, I think.
So with the US Open tennis, and we'll talk to Craig shortly for all the updates, but is it normal time of the year for the US Open tennis? It must be.
Yes, it is. Yep.
Yeah, it is.
Yep. Yeah, because I was just reading the
on the
stage.
Might be a week later than normal.
Samantha Stosur became Australia's first female Grand Slam singles champion in 31 years on this day in 2011 when she beat Serena Williams at the US Open.
Still reckon that's one of the great upsets in sport in recent times. In the last, if you look at the last 20 years, that's one of the great upsets. And not just the fact that she won that day, but the brutality of the victory. Like, she won easily against Serena Williams. It was all set up for her to win because it was 10 years since 9/11. And there was, it was all set up for the superstar of American sport to be able to win on that anniversary in New York. And Sam, with nothing to lose, just wiped her off the court, which just doesn't happen when it comes to Serena. Let alone, it's not only just about winning, but Sam almost overpowered her that day. And, you know, we obviously know that Sam didn't really do a lot after that. She was okay, but when we always thought that the French Open was her surface. But, yeah, it was an amazing couple of weeks for her.
It was. It was. Did you know yesterday racing ran its 2,000th race since the pandemic? 2,000.
Yes.
That's a good effort, isn't it?
It's extraordinary.
Well, they've done an amazing effort. Amazing how they've been able to keep racing going, how professional they've been in that area. It's, you know, particularly when there was no sport on, when, you know, there was no AFL, nothing on. That was, you know, what you did on the weekend. You watched the races for a couple of hours and to try to get a little bit of some sort of enjoyment. So, well done to them. I think they've done a marvellous job.
Yep. Yeah, well, no one could dispute that. It's been quite something, the way it's been able to hold up. And speaking of quite something, Whitey, for those that missed the big announcement yesterday on Michael Felgate's program for us here on RSN 927, the spring ticket was the announcement. What was the spring ticket for those playing at home that might have missed it, had to do some stuff through the morning?
Well, talking about the fact that, unfortunately, while the racing is continuing and they are doing a great job, you know, we can't go to the races at the moment. So what RSN have decided to do is, for those that can't make it but still want that spring experience but might be out in the car or going for a walk, download the app. That's the most important thing to do. Download the app and you get pretty much unrestricted access to the Spring Carnival with Michael Felgate and Gareth Hall, Matt Stewart and Dean Lester and Nick Quinn sort of headlining things. But we've got Dwayne Dunn and Jamie Carr part of the coverage tomorrow. So we'll just have the Melbourne races. We'll also have the Victorian Provincial races, which tomorrow are at Warracknabeal, the Sydney Key races. So you'll get all sorts of opportunities to interact with the team and just get better insight and better understanding of how the racing is unfolding, because we've got time on the digital channel. Obviously, with John Henry and the team on our normal race day coverage, it's back-to-back racing because we're covering every race all across Australia, so you don't have that time necessarily to sort of expand on what's actually unfolding right throughout the course of the day. That will happen across on our Carnival channel. So I said, download the app. You can listen on the website as well. Or if you've got a digital radio, you can do that too at home. And, yeah, just experience, you know, the entire afternoon at the races. So we're really looking forward to it. In fact, we're very excited about it because it's a great opportunity.
Half, are you comfortable that we're unleashing Gareth even more?
Well, I didn't want to say this, talk about this publicly, but you brought it up. I'm concerned that there's an inflated sense of self for our man at the moment, and that this is only going to hinder his ability to get it back to sort of regulation settings. I am concerned. This does concern me greatly, Rama. I must be honest.
Oh, I love him. He's my man, but he's one man that can make me laugh constantly. I follow him on Instagram, and I love his work on Instagram when he does his preview of his show coming up, and I'll send him a message every now and then, and we have a laugh together. He's a good man, our Gareth.
No, genuine concern for where this leads for Gareth. this is real prime time stuff. It's not really his go. It's not really his go.
What I'm also wondering on the app, will we actually see his face more?
We don't want that.
No, we're not going that far.
Okay, because I was going to say if there is more of Gareth's face, we'll be seeing a bit of a rinse go through the hair, I imagine, because there are a few greys creeping in.
He has been known to rinse. He has been known to rinse, which is a concern in itself. But I don't think it's going to get any better with this opportunity, this prime time opportunity. He'll be tinting eyelashes soon. That's what he'll be doing. Yeah. We're in real trouble here. Real trouble.
But it's
going to be great coverage. Spring ticket.
Yeah, and just on that, just to sort of wrap things up on that. It is something that we're really proud of, and it's something, and we haven't done it yet, but we're proud of it.
But I think, as I said,
I think it's a great concept, and it obviously, as I said, for those that can't go, it's just that additional layer of information. You know, hopefully we'll speak to trainers and jockeys, particularly trainers, throughout the course of the day, so there'll be a news angle to it as well. It's something that we've all been passionate about trying to do for quite some time, and we just felt that this was the appropriate time, considering what's going on, and so many more people will either be at home or, as I said before, walking the dog or out in the garden. Hopefully people can access the racing.com coverage if you have got the ability to watch it on television. You know, Channel 7 have got it as well. But it just gives that extra opportunity for people to consume the races, and that's what it's all about.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Looking forward to that. What about the Saints last night, Rema? What an opportunity.
I was just going to mention that to Whitey. I thought the performance of West Coast last night, considering what was missing and then considering what they lost, obviously, within that game, was unbelievable. Like they played a funny style of game where they obviously wanted to possess the ball as much as they could, but St Kilda really were quite dominant in possession but simply couldn't score. Then St Kilda challenged hard in that last quarter, really, really hard. They did their work early in that last quarter, but to West Coast's credit, they hung around. Tim Kelly was unbelievable last night. He was almost a one-man midfielder. Obviously Gaff was the leading possession winner on the ground, but Gaff played that more of an outside role. But Tim Kelly and that goal that he kicked in the last quarter put the Eagles back in front was simply amazing. But no doubt, half an absolute missed opportunity for St Kilda and all those St Kilda fans out there. It puts that final spot, Whitey, for them in a little bit of jeopardy now, doesn't it?
No, it does, absolutely. Last night was a classic game of how you can look at it two ways, positively and negatively. The positive was the inspirational acts of some of West Coast's leaders. All their leaders stood up for them, particularly after Jeremy McGovern went down. The ability for the Eagles to somehow find a way of winning, and largely on the efforts of Nat Nui, Kelly, Gaff, Josh Kennedy really lifted in the last quarter. Darling was good. Shepherd across halfback. They really stood up collectively as a leadership group. That's what leaders do. That's what good teams do, because they've got good leaders in their team that won't let an opportunity slip. Whereas if you look at it from the other perspective, where were St Kilda's leaders standing up? Because they really shouldn't have lost that game, considering the Eagles and the decimation of that midfield, and the dominance that St Kilda had in portions of that match, and then particularly at the end with West Coast down rotations and St Kilda getting control back, that they didn't just roll on and win that game by 3 or 4 goals and seal a spot in the finals. That's really, really going to hurt. And we are often critical of teams late in the season that don't take their opportunities. And we think of Melbourne in that last home and away game a couple of years ago. Some of the things that the Bulldogs have done at times, particularly in finals against the Giants last year. That could really haunt St Kilda, because that was an opportunity missed, in my view.
Well, it was, no doubt about that. But I think one thing, I reckon we all in footy underestimate how tough the West Coast Eagles are. Now, with this season, they've had some performances, particularly at the start of the season, where things weren't quite right. And we spoke to Simo about that a couple of weeks ago whenever we spoke to him. Things didn't quite go to plan. And they certainly didn't go to plan last night with injuries and who they had access to out there on the field. But they're a tough team, West Coast, full stop.
Yeah.
Full stop. And what they do have, and this is why I wasn't too concerned about their injuries through the midfield last night, but if you want to go through a finals campaign, you're going to need those players, is they have a defence that seemingly is able to intercept and stop the ball coming in really effectively, regardless of who's out there. And they have a forward line that marks the ball inside forward 50 a lot. So the way they use the ball, they're skill level and their decision making with that ball inside 50, Ramos, we've talked about for a lot of teams this year, I think is probably the best in the competition. They use the ball better than anyone in that area of the ground, which always gives them a chance, because they'll get enough looks to have some scoring opportunities. And what has stood out to me, like the absolute proverbial dogs, is that Liam Ryan is one of the best players in the competition.
Yeah, he is great call.
Something else, that boy. He's almost a complete play. He can go up and use the ball through traffic. Obviously, get back and sit on your head if you put it up high. He dances around you. He's left foot, right foot. Great decision maker. He is a fantastic player, that boy. That young man, he's an absolute ripper.
Yeah, it's a great call, Half.
Yeah, the way he was jumping aerially last night for that football was, you know, quite spectacular at times. He could have taken mark of the year four or five times last night, just the way he was flying for the ball. But I agree about the defence, Half. What you're talking about, West Coast defence, they're just rock solid. Shannon Hearn, Brad Shepherd, I've always felt is one of the more underrated players across the competition. Some of his acts last night, you know, going back with the flight of the ball when he sat in front of Rowan Marshall. Rowan Marshall charged through him in that last quarter, gave the 50-metre penalty away. But they're composed, Whitey, with the football.
Yeah, they are. Gee, Rowan Marshall, that 50 was shocking, and they had it in at their end of the ground to let the... But the other one that I thought really lifted for them with Jeremy McGovern out was Tom Barrass.
Ron.
You know, in some wet conditions, some tough conditions, some of the defensive acts that he did, you know, we know him as an intercept marker and all that sort of thing, but some of the things he did was very impressive as well. You could see the emotion from Adam Simpson on the siren. He knew how big that was. And, you know, we talked to him earlier in the week and we actually asked him, you know, what are you looking for from your team? What is it? What is something that is a non-negotiable in such a strange year? And he said, what did he say? Half
spirit.
Effort and spirit?
Play with spirit.
Well, he certainly got that from his team last night. And, no, I think it was one of the more inspiring wins of the year, to be perfectly honest.
So Whitey and Half... So St Kilda's final game now is against GWS. Okay, so Collingwood play Gold Coast. So I think they should win. GWS play Melbourne. So that's almost a bit of an elimination final. Yep. The Western Bulldogs play Hawthorn. Okay, so we expect the Western Bulldogs to win.
We do.
Then the final rounds, Collingwood play... so St Kilda and GWS is their final round. Collingwood play Port Adelaide. Yep. Western Bulldogs play Fremantle and Melbourne will play Essendon.
They're good
so,
match-ups.
My opinion, it's one of probably St Kilda and GWS who will miss the finals. I see the Western Bulldogs going in there with their run home and playing finals.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's probably the right call, considering some of the permutations and the possibilities through that next couple of games, Rama. It's a fascinating end. It's a fascinating end to the season. I'm really looking forward to it, just for that reason alone. Even the top four hunt is going to be interesting when Richmond play tonight against Geelong, of course, which we'll talk about after 8 o'clock on the Friday footy preview.
Game.
But that's also a massive game for top four ramifications.
Yeah.
Well, so that's huge.
That was a bad result last night for Richmond, West Coast winning, because now the Tigers pretty much have to beat Geelong to get top four. It was a really good result for the Bulldogs last night with St Kilda losing, because as Rama said, if the Bulldogs win their next two, they could pretty much finish seventh.
Yeah.
So their destiny is certainly in their hands, and great result for our Melbourne half. Really puts them back in the frame now.
You haven't cashed out
win their last two and they're in.
Haven't cashed out?
No, I told you. I backed Fremantle last week and now I'm still alive. It's wonderful. One thing, Rama, and I know what you just said, and I don't disagree necessarily with what you said, but I think I said this yesterday. It never goes to script in the last couple of rounds.
No,
we all think we've got it sorted, and something happens that we don't expect. Now, last night's game could have gone either way. St Kilda started about $1.60 favourite, but you know, clearly that game could have gone either way, but there will be one rogue result that will tip everything upside down. It always does. History says that.
Well, Western Bulldogs play Hawthorn in Adelaide and Fremantle in Cairns. So they've got two travels, obviously, with those two games.
That Fremantle game's got sirens and flashing lights and all sorts of things all over it for the doggies.
Get to Craig Gabriel. What's happening in tennis?
Oh, nothing at the moment. No, I don't think at the moment. There's still a couple of hours to go before play gets underway in the women's semifinals. Naomi Osaka will be the first one on against Jennifer Brady. They've played once. It was in Charleston in South Carolina in 2018, the year that Osaka went on to win the U.S. Open. And Osaka won on that occasion. Brady has had a great run. She's not lost a set. The only one of the four women left in the semifinals that has not lost a set, but that's going to change today. I think Osaka will win in straight sets. And then after that, you got Mums Incorporated all over again. For the first time in tennis history, back-to-back matches, certainly the major, have been played with two mums against one another. Yeah, Serena Williams defeated Svetlana Pironkova, and now she's playing Victoria Azarenka, who's also a mother. Yeah. So, yeah, 18-4 is the head-to-head in Serena's favour.
Well, and that's the number I was going to go to. And then further to that, I think, even though I think in the at the markets, if you want to play those games, Victoria Azarenka is a short price, a slight favourite over Serena Williams. The way she's playing has been quite devastating. But is it 10-0 Serena's way in major championships?
Yeah.
Boy.
The two, I mean, as far as the US Open is concerned, the two that stand out in my mind, I remember watching them so well, were the two finals that they played in 12 and 13, and they were great matches. The last time they played was in Indian Wells last year. It was 7-5, 6-3 to Serena. Now, Victoria said it wasn't a great match because both of us were still pretty new coming back. Now, I would dispute that because I thought it was a great match from memory. I really enjoyed watching that match between the two of them. Straight sets, sure, wasn't a three-set nail-biter cliffhanger, but I was in Indian Wells when that match was played, and I really enjoyed watching that one.
So where are you leaning for those two games? You said that Naomi will take out the first one. What about Serena and Vika?
Look, I think Serena might get through. I think I wouldn't be surprised if it goes to three sets, but I think Serena might get through on this one.
And that's today's action.
She played a great match yesterday. Absolutely outstanding. She thumped the living daylights out of Elise Mertens, 6-1, 6-love.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a clinic. I was watching a bit of that. She put on a bit of a clinic there, did Vika. So that's the semi-final action today in the women's. Tomorrow's semi-final in the men's is interesting. We talked about Karolina Busta and Zverev's clash after Karolina Busta obviously had the walkover over Novak and then defeated Denis Shapovalov in the quarters in a five-setter. So it took him a bit of work. He's got Zverev coming up. And then Alex de Minaur played Dominic Thiem yesterday and really, well, he was there, but not really putting up too much of a fight. Dominic Thiem was outstanding.
Dommy was absolutely, he was just on fire yesterday. Some of the tennis he played was quite sublime, and especially the match, the way he played that match point. It's not that Dimonor played badly. He was just outplayed. He was not given any chances. There was a bit of a slight glimmer in the third set, but that was so slight. And even he said, look, there was a net cord that didn't work in Alex's favour. And he says, not that was necessarily going to change anything, but it would have been good to get that, and then maybe we see what happens. But Domi was just absolutely on fire. And this was going to be interesting to see when he comes up against Daniil Medvedev, who hasn't lost a set. Like Brady on the women's side, Medvedev hasn't lost a set on the men's side, and the only one in that situation. He was also outstanding against Andre Rublev, which was, you have to say, would have been a more experienced, a bit more of a tougher opponent. That's not knocking Alex. Alex has got to develop into his body a lot more and get more experience, whereas Rublev has already won two titles this year. And Medvedev was fantastic in that match. But what I really liked about Alex yesterday is his comments afterwards when I spoke with him. And he was saying, I believe I deserve to be here. I want these. These are the majors. These are the titles I really want. And his quote was, I wish I could just flick a switch and have it now.
The Friday form for first-time players, we have a look at the Quaddie Leagues. And then Dino gives us his formula bet for one of our punters. If you haven't registered for that, you need to do that as well, rsn.net.au. And then the Ramarufi comes into play, and it's one of the all-time great icons of racing and sport, is the Ramarufi. It's been an absolute phenomenon in the last couple of months. And we'll find the Ramarufi a little bit later on as well from Dino. But let's have a look at race number six, Dino. The Sofitel, 1,400-metre affair tomorrow at Flemington. Good-sized fields tomorrow, as you expect, on Group 1 action. And the Wizard from the West is in those famous Grant and Alana Williams colours tomorrow on Windstorm, number 14. And Windstorm is favourite at tab.com.au.
Yeah, I think he probably should be too, Daniel. He's an exciting horse, and I thought he was good last start. That was too short for him at 1,100 metres. It was only a benchmark race, and he goes to a stakes race here, but he is on the up, and a lot of these horses have probably had the peak of their career and maybe even on the way down. So he's a good winning chance, but I think there's a good chance at odds here in Romanta, number 9. I'm anticipating the rain that's predicted coming, and that suits him. And he's just such an effective horse at Flemington. He won last start there. He's had a freshen. He's trialled up nicely for this race. I think he'll give a great side. I just think he maps for a beautiful run. And I think he's a good chance to beat Windstorm. No real knock on Windstorm. I think they're the two better chances. Conceding chances to 11, Bumper Blast. Probably only wants the track about a soft five. If the really heavy rain came, he might be in trouble. But I'll put him in for third. And Yulong January, who's a track and distance specialist, he's fitter for two runs in, ready to do something. But, yeah, I like the race around principally 9 and 14, but I'll be putting the other two in the quaddie as well.
So having a look at the numbers there, Quinny, as we have a look at the market as well from the tab, Romanta looks like it's in double-figure odds, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, very good start for the quarter year, hopefully, and has been $19 into 14, but still a $14 chance there, Romanta. Dino's on top selection, and he's currently the tab's second biggest liability in the race. The biggest liability is the favourite, Windstorm, who's been $2.40 into even money, subsequently back out to $2.20. Yulong January, an $8.50 second elect, then Bumper Blast, $9.50. You know, you're certainly not knocking Windstorm. You've got the horse in for second, and you were pretty positive then speaking about Windstorm. But currently the shortest price favourite on the Flemington program. Do you think that will change come race day? And what sort of price do you have Windstorm, Mark?
Oh, no, I think he'll be fairly short. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And certainly the Bob Peters horses have got a real aura about them at the moment, the way they've been going, and this horse ran well, and I see you've made him a best bet, so he's going to be very short, Quinny. So I think the price are at the moment, look, as I've said here before, I think often dependent on the results through the day. If there's a couple of roughies get in, maybe they'll take a bit of a risk with him, but he should be a fairly short price favourite, and he is.
I'm more up and about the fact I've got Romanta in the numbers as well, so that won't be going anywhere now. There's also been money at longer odds for Furion, who's been $34 into 23. This horse resumes. We last saw him in the 2019 Warrnambool Cup when he was simply brilliant on that occasion. Has a good record first up and over the distance, Dino. Do you think the horse might just need a run or two, though, to get back into form?
Yeah, I think so. I'm fortunate enough that I do a bit of management of Jerry Ryan's horses, and that's one of his, and seen all of his work and trials courtesy of Lindsay Park. And look, I think the little specking for him was he trialled just beside Humidor before Humidor obviously went and won the Fian last week. But this is a different sort of task, and this horse is off a lot longer break than Humidor. So I just think Furion might need the day out.
And what about Inverloch, Dan? I saw the trial, massive wraps on its recent trial. What would Inverloch be looking forward to this spring?
Look, if he got to those good country cups, a Cranbourne Cup, which is high prize money race, that sort of race, whether they're aiming a bit higher, I'm not sure, but I think he fits into like a Cranbourne Cup profile horse because he's an on-pace runner at that sort of distance.
I think I might have heard the Bald Eagle talking about his trial yesterday with Blue Eyes, so that's $101 in the market tomorrow, but principally, and we've got our numbers already, Rama, and your job for those first-timers is to give us the numbers at the end of each race of the quaddie legs. And can you please do that today for us after race six, the first leg of the quaddie tomorrow at Flemington?
Yes, 9, 14, 11 and 8.
9, 14, 11, 8 in the first leg of the quaddie. The second leg is the feature event of the card. The PFD Food Services Maccabi Diva Stakes, weight for age Group 1 affair over the mile, $750,000 up for grabs. A full field of 16 going around. Some really good horses in this, as you can imagine, for a Group 1 affair. And we go down to number 13, Dino, and one of the horses of the spring returns tomorrow for Danny O'Brien. Damien Oliver is in the saddle. Barrier 14 won't be too big a concern for Russian Camelot, his favourite at the tab.
Yeah, I'm not so sure it's not a concern. It'll be interesting to see the first 200 metres or so, because he's just got to switch off and relax early, get a bit of cover. And if the track comes up soft by this stage of the day, they might be winning off the rail, so the draw mightn't be any sort of problem. I thought that the horse that's just got the right form for this sort of race is Fierce Impact. His last three runs at 1600 in Melbourne, he's won the Toorak, the Cantala, and run third in the All-Star Mile. So he's got a really good profile for this sort of race. So I think he's a great winning chance. I think Delasan will run well. He's a Carbine Club Stakes winner at this track. He didn't really like the Morpheville Parks track last start. The tight track didn't suit him before that. He ran very well to Behemoth, who won the Memsey, of course. So you've got a pretty good form line there. And I think he's more suited to the 1600 and a good draw at this stage of his preparation. Chances, though, to Perfect Jewel. Loved her win first up at Caulfield. And up to the 1600s, no problem. And then the high-profile horses, you put them in the quaddie because they're good enough to win, and they're Russian Camelot and Master of Wine. They've got big spruiks on them for the spring. Russian Camelot's first up, Master of Wine. I was a little bit underwhelmed by his first up run, but just thinking that 1600 will suit better. Whether he actually needs 2000 to win at this class would be my little query. But yeah, it's a really good race, but there's a couple that are probably more set for this race than the bigger profile horses.
So before I get to Quinny, you mentioned the rain before. What are you expecting to be running on tomorrow, Dano, considering the forecast?
Well, there's a fair difference between 5 and 20 mils, and that's where they're going, so they've covered their bases. 5 mils to settle the dust, 20 mils we're looking to get off the rail and run on late. So.
Okay. All right, so everybody, just check your local guides for the weather details. But, Quinny, it's a great race, some outstanding horses for this Group 1 affair. What does the market say?
Well, Damien Oliver has the ride aboard Russian Camelot. Oliver looking to win this race for a sixth time, and the horse has been the best back, currently a $3.60 chance. Fierce Impact has firmed from $8 into $5. Then we've got Perfect Jewel, $6.50. Delasan, $8.50. Kings Will Dream, $9.50. Double figures or better the rest. Dino, last week we saw Surprise Baby beaten, but probably a lot more people were bullish after that run because it was such an eye-catcher, and going forward to the likes of the Melbourne Cup was such an encouraging performance. With Russian Camelot, do you think after tomorrow people might re-evaluate the fact that the horse is so prominent in the big races, having just 5 career starts, coming up against the big guns tomorrow? Or do you think the horse will do enough just to keep ticking over for those big feature goals?
Yeah, there's a few thoughts there. I mean, he's a bit different to Surprise Baby. He's a stallion, so a Group 1 win at 1600 certainly would help his profile. I think he'll be a really good run. If he wins, that'll be a bonus for them, but I think he'll be the eye-catcher late. I think he'll be ridden to get cover, relaxed, because he's so inexperienced. He's only had the 5 starts, and he's the only one in single figures going into the race. The next is Miami Bound at 10 starts, so he's giving away a lot of experience, and that might count against him tomorrow, but it might be part of the teaching phase for him going forward to winning a big feature in the spring.
And you mentioned Master of Wine, a little underwhelming when resuming from a spell. Did that run affect how you view Master of Wine on the back of running 12th in the Wing Stakes for some of the big races where the horse has had such a big spruik?
Not really. Probably the fact that he won first up last time in got the profile a bit mixed up. I think what he is 2,000 metres plus is where he comes into his own. So if he runs well tomorrow, he's right on track for something over further.
And Gadding caused a huge upset winning this race last year. Now with Peter Moody in a $51 chance, form says no. Is there any slight reason to suggest Gadding could run a cheeky race?
Well, he's got a clear advantage from the draw. The speed it looks a bit mixed, other than that Galo Chop will probably lead from 3, and Gadding from 4 can probably land straight outside the lead if they so desire. So, you know, whether something from out wide comes across, but if they don't, he'll get a very easy run on the pace. That would be his best chance.
All right, so it is an absolute cracker to kick off a big spring at headquarters, the Group 1 action, Maccabi Diva Stakes Day. Quinny, they've outstanding summary from you. Rama, what are the numbers, please, for the second leg of the quaddie?
4, 11, 14, 13, and 9.
4, 11, 14, 13, 9. Are your numbers for the Maccabi Diva Stakes, the feature event on the card. Let's have a look at the third leg, the Downhill Stakes. I like this one. Three-year-old Group 2 affair, $200,000 up for grabs. Down the 1,200 metres there, the fabulous, famous Straight Six of Flemington. What do we got? 11 going around, Dino. I have to go too far down the order to find out the favourite. It's for the Mayor Eustace Yard with Johnny Allen in the saddle. Number one, Prague, is 420 at the tab.
Yeah, I think the form of those horses coming from Sydney, and Prague is first up, but he's racing in Sydney last preparation and ran well in the features. And the other one is Doubtland, who did a lot of work mid-race first up and might have looked disappointing, but I think this is a totally different race structure, and especially if the rain comes, his win over the championships was absolutely outstanding on wet ground. So I like those two. I think they're the principal players. I've got a leaning to Doubtland because he's had one run back, but Prague will run very well. Couple from lesser profiles in there to date, but I think they're good horses, is 9 Ty Deuce, who's handled wet and dry and won with great authority at Bendigo. He just looks a really nice horse going through the grades. 11 Anna Visto comes off a maiden win at Mornington, but you won't see an easier win. She strolled home, and it's I wouldn't think that Mick Price and Michael Kent Jr. would do this on a whim. I think they've got a very high opinion of her. And 7 Ranting, I thought his run in the McNeil was really good because he actually was ridden off the speed and hit the line hard, and that was the best I think we've seen of Ranting to date, even though that was his first unplaced run. I think it was his best run, so going forward I think he's got a little chance. But terrific race. I've left out the likes of Wisdom of Water, who's trialled well, first run up the straight, but looks a very smart horse, and Personal, who placed in the Blue Diamond, so that shows the depth of the race.
All right, it's a good race. It's a good edition of the Downhill, which we love to see. Quinny, we know that Prague's the favourite, but has there been support for the favourite, or is it coming around it at the moment?
Around it at this stage, Daniel. Prague a little bit soft, 380 out to 420. Wisdom of Water, a $6 second elect, then Doubtland, 750. Personal is the best back runner at this stage, $13 into $8. But my three-year-old son, Mitchell, will often walk into the room and say, I've got good news and bad news. Most of the time, he's just broken something. And I'm now reporting good news and bad news. The good news was that we got a call from the Mick Price stable about a week ago asking to add Wisdom of Water to the Coolmore market. And since that point in time, Wisdom of Water has been $26 into $15. And I was very up and about coming into the studio today to talk about that and hopefully get a good little push from Dino. And now Dino hasn't got the horse in his top five. You did mention, Dean, that it's just such an open race, you can make a good case for even some of the classy runners you've left out. But this horse is a group winner from Queensland. It does seem to have a big spruik. Is there a bit of a concern tomorrow? Obviously there is, if you haven't got him in the quaddy.
Look, he's a very smart horse, and he's a brilliant horse. So I always find those horses, if it gets wetter, a little bit disadvantaged. That's only a speculative thing. He might plough through it, but he's a very good talent. But I was sort of banking on the track deteriorating through the day, and that might be just detrimental to him.
Mm. If the rain does come, we might not even see him. Time will tell.
But did you say they wanted the price for the Coolmore?
Yes, and has been 26 into 15.
Righto. Okay, well, there's something. There's something for someone somewhere along the line, if you're into that sort of stuff. So that's an interesting race, the Downhill, which we love. What a stallion he was too, just by the way. Rama, what are the numbers, please, for the third leg of the quaddie?
4, 1, 9, 11, and 7.
Race 9 is the last leg of the quaddies. Now, the quaddie. How do you say this, Dino? The Cap d'Antibes? D'Antibes?
Cap,
how do you say
Cap d'Antibes, yes. Won a Lightning in the Newmarket. She was a brilliant filly for Bart Cummings.
I've always wondered how that was pronounced, so I'm glad I've clarified that. Cap d'Antibes stakes tomorrow, the 1,100 metres, three-year-old fillies, listed race, $140,000 up for grabs, and a big, big field going around as well, Dino. And there's currently in the market, I don't think we've had this for a while, there are three equal favourites at the tab for this race to finish the quaddie. Number 4, Menage, for Dominic Hayes. Number 6, Parlophone, who we've spoken about before on Friday form with Price and Kent Jr. And number 9, Swat's That for Team Corstens at 480 at tab.com.au.
Yeah, they're three of the main chances, and I'd add one other, and that is number 3, Let's Be Glam. But Minhaj is the one to beat for mine. Her win down the straight back in the autumn, it was outstanding when she won the Thoroughbred Breeders, and then she had a wide run in the Golden Slipper. She's had two jump outs, very quiet jump out first time, and then the most recent one, I thought she was terrific. She just got a beautiful action. I just love the way she goes about it, and I think the straight suits her. But Let's Be Glam's a very good filly in the Besutton Young stable, won the Blue Diamond Prelude for fillies, then ran well in the Blue Diamond. She's trialled up well. She's ready to go. Swat's That's had two jump outs. She's flying. She's a good filly. And Parlophone's had a bad habit of coming out and putting a little bit of a buck jump out of the gates, which has been very costly to her. If she gets it right and is on her best behaviour, she can win, as she showed in Adelaide when she won the Lightning Stakes. So I think that whilst it's a big field, I think there's a fair divide between those four and the rest. So happy to be just playing those four runners.
Are we down the outside rail there, Dino, in the last, do you reckon?
Oh, they'll huddle towards the centre, they seem to, and beyond that. So I've sort of, I like those that have drawn out a little bit, and probably that's why I've gone with Minhaj just ahead of Let's Be Glam, because she has drawn a bit wider. But they'll probably be off the rail, yeah.
Three equal favourites. Quinny, we don't see this very often. What's happening in the market?
Two of them have been popular, Minhaj and Swat's That. Minhaj, $7 into, as you alluded to, one of three runners at $4.80, and Swat's That, $6.50 into $4.80. So they are the two that punters are focusing on. And something else we don't see very often is a first starter in the last race on the program here, and number 18, Amuri from the Tony and Kelvin McAvoy stable, is doing exactly that. And looking through the history books, it's rare to see a first starter win the last race at Flemington. I came up with Astro Castro in July 2016 at odds of 100-1, and Fair Trade in 2009, who was 26-15. Dino, what do you make of the first starter, Amuri? Because obviously they could have had lots of easier races to kick off this horse's campaign, but you see Ben Mallon ride for the McAvoy stable. It does sort of stick out a little bit.
Yeah, it's not unusual for the McAvoys, as Tony describes it, placing them aggressively, and this is certainly an aggressive placement. She has trialled well on two occasions. She's certainly got a degree of talent, and hence why they're running her here. But, I still think it's a big ask to win on debut. She could easily get around the money because, as I said, she has shown a good degree of talent.
Now, before we get the Ramaruffy and get Rama to read out those quality numbers again, I just wanted to say well done, Dino, for last week, because it was so nice to see so many people happy on social media and whatnot, and a lot of people are doing it very tough at the moment. Money comes and goes, we all know that, but I think you brought a lot of people together last week in booting home a winner or two, so well done, and it must have been nice to have some positive commentary on Twitter, something that's certainly very, very foreign to.
Yeah, it was a foreign experience, but it was very good.
Yes, it's a foreign experience for anyone on Twitter to get positive feedback, but you absolutely deserved it last week. A big quaddy jagged and the formula bet as well, as a fill-your-boots sort of day for listeners to the Friday form last week, as it's been so often in the recent months. Rama, what are the numbers for the last leg of the quaddy, please?
4, 3, 9, and 6.
And now I'm going to need them all again, please, because you know what's happened. Yes. Someone's just woken up and they haven't heard all of the segment, which is disappointing, but they need the numbers for the quaddy, please.
Okay, race 6, 9, 14, 11, and 8. Race 7, 4, 11, 14, 13, and 9. Race 8, 4, 1, 9, 11, and 7.
Emotional.
Yes, very. Race 9, 11, race 9, 4, 3, 9, and 6.
4, 3, 9, and 6. All right, they are the quality numbers for tomorrow. Now, of course, make sure you tune in tomorrow morning to the panel and get the refined numbers, depending on maybe some scratchings with heavy rain forecast for Flemington tomorrow. Let's get to the formula bet. Dino, who are we playing for today, and what have you got for us?
Dale Hooper of Pakenham is our contestant for Dale. A $40 win bet, race 1, number 4, Shabao. $40 to win race 5, number 3, Actow. And $40 on the all-up of the pair, race 1, number 4, into race 5, number 3. And that's for Dale Hooper of Pakenham.
Well, hopefully Dale's not digging holes tomorrow with the formula bet. He gets a winner, Quinny. You like that little zinger?
Oh, dear. I'm embarrassed to admit how much I'm chuckling right there.
What's that come to?
$9.03.
$9.03 times 1.82. You'll have a great time with that. All right, so that's for Dale. Good luck to him. Race 1, number 4, and race 5, number 3, which leaves us now with the Ramo Ruffy, Dino. What do you got for us in the Ruffy Stakes tomorrow?
Yes, it's one we mentioned in the quaddy legs, Daniel. Race 6, number 9, Romancer. As I said, he's got a bit of a challenge to beat Windstorm, but a bit like Junipelli a few weeks ago, he's a really good place bet. So if you were sort of spending $30, you might have 10 the win and 20 the place.
Good idea. And the market for that one again, Quinny?
Currently $14 the win and $3.60 the place. So hopefully that can be a nice little way for punters to kick off the quaddy.
Well, $3.60 the place is better than $2.20 the win for the favourite Windstorm. So you play that game and you'll be in front with the Ramo Ruffy. Dino, always a pleasure on a Friday morning to have your company. We appreciate it again, mate. Good luck to you tomorrow as part of the spring tickets. Looking forward to that. And hope you hit many, many winners. Good luck.
Terrific. Thank you, Daniel.
Great stuff. Dean Lester with us, the world's greatest form analyst on the Friday Form. Quinny, before we say goodbye to you, a tip from you, please.
I really like a horse in the first in Sydney tomorrow. My plan of attack is back the horse tomorrow and have a pre-post bet for the Metropolitan, because I do think we will see race 1, number 3, Cadre Noir, race through the grades this spring. Won very well at Sandown last start. So $10 at the $1.80 tomorrow, and then a $4 each way pre-post bet for the Metrop. It'll be paid for, and you'll be on nice overs after the victory tomorrow.
He's putting his hand up for Coach of the Year on us is what he's doing. He's done a hell of a job with the Fremantle Dockers. Fantastic win in horrendous conditions up in Cairns last weekend against the D's. And the Kangaroos tomorrow at Metricon Stadium. We speak of Justin Longmuir, of course. He joins us on the Breakfast Club. Good morning, JL.
G'day, gents. How are we?
We are going very well, thank you. How are you enjoying this whole process of senior coaching in what can only be described as the most unusual year we've ever seen in footy?
Yeah, well, it has had its challenges. There's no doubt about that. And it's not really the way I envisaged my first year to go. But having said that, I've enjoyed it. I've enjoyed the challenges. I've enjoyed the opportunities that we've got as a coaching group to spend more time with our players in hubs. There are a lot of positives to come out of it, so, especially for a first-year coach, getting to know his players and getting to know the staff. Been really impressed with the way we've embraced every challenge and, yeah, I've enjoyed it, even though it's been difficult at times.
We've talked to a lot of players through the year and coaches as well, and it seems that the ones that are really thriving in hub life are the younger, developing, emerging teams, Longy, that get to spend that time together and grow as a group really, really tightly. Are you finding that with your boys? I mean, there's such a good crew of players that are going to be great players, I think, from the AFL for their AFL careers, but they're still very young. So this time together is quite invaluable.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, we get to spend a bit more time with them, and you get to spend more time with them on issues other than footy. So you get to have dinner with them and talk about their life outside of footy and get to know them on a deeper level, which is, you know, invaluable for a first-year coach. The other thing that's made it a lot easier for us is that we don't have... A lot of our players don't have families back home. We've got a lot of single, younger players on our list, which makes it easier when you have to move away from home for 6 or 8 weeks and you're not leaving, you know, 3 kids at home. We've got a few players in that boat, but I think it's only 4. So that makes it a lot easier when you're travelling across the country with... when you're not leaving loved ones at home.
And what about you in the coach's box? Did you know what sort of coach you'd be as the senior coach? You've obviously been in the system for a long time now and sort of honed your craft at an assistant level, but I love watching you, the way you engage and how emotionally invested you are into the contest. Did you think you'd be that coach?
No, I didn't. I thought I'd stonewall it and I didn't think any emotions would take over me. I got warned that when you become a senior coach, you become a madman. So I'm mindful of that. But I actually feel like I've tried to, you know, not get emotionally involved, and I feel like I coach better when I'm involved and communicating with the guys in the box, and there's good dialogue. And last week I did definitely ride every contest and every bump, and
yeah, I'll try and find the line with that. But I don't think it's a bad thing some of the times to show your players how much you care for them, and you're out there with them in some sense. That was the other thing that I found in the coach's box. You are helpless sometimes, and you feel like you want to control things, but really you just need to let the players do their thing and watch in some sense. So, you know, I'm still trying to find the balance with all that.
Oh, I wouldn't go changing, mate. I think it's a great thing, and it absolutely shows your players that you're absolutely invested in every second of the contest, Rammer. I think it's a good thing.
Oh, no doubt, no doubt. And that's when your players play for you. You're sitting 13th on the ladder, Justin. But it feels like the season has been a real success. I know a lot of people measure success by whether you play finals or not, but in terms of the way Fremantle's playing, I've always thought the greatest sort of badge of honour is when an opposition says the team you're playing against, they're hard to play against. Do you feel like it's still been a successful season, albeit that you're sitting 13th on the ladder?
Yeah, definitely. I think as a senior coach, you're always looking for the improvement areas, and you always probably dwell on the ones that got away. And I feel like we've had a few games, especially early in the year, but the Carlton game as well, we lost after the siren. It's just a few of those games where we didn't quite get it done in the end. And I think we've grown and improved our footy across the year, and we've got better and better each week, which is a good sign. And I think early in the year, when we lost our first four games, and that was on the back of we were playing some pretty good footy at times, but we just had some horrendous quarters and some really bad momentum swings where we'd cough up four goals in a row, and that would pretty much be the story in the game. So we've managed to improve that area. We're a lot more consistent across the board. And, I feel like the players have got a good grasp of the type of game we want to play, and the type of roles that we're asking them to play, and that consistency has shone through as the season's evolved.
So obviously there's still plenty of scope for Fremantle's game to evolve, but has it being in the hub situation and having so much access to the players, has that helped or hindered the fast tracking of what you want to do with this football club, as on the field, but two off the field, and turning, you know, these players into great people? Has it helped, or do you find it still challenging that seeing these players every day, sometimes it can be too much football?
Oh, we've definitely tried to find the balance there, to have our program in place where footy, and then, yeah, you know, their personal space is their personal space, and try not to cross those lines and intrude on their personal space, because they need to escape from footy, and sometimes that's really hard when you're seeing them in the foyer and at breakfast and dinner and lunch. And so we've been really mindful of that as a coaching group, and in a lot of ways probably helped our culture and our connection. So that's been really beneficial, and that'll stay with us for, you know, the years to come. The challenge has been this year that we haven't been able to train as a group. We haven't been able to do competitive 18-on-18 training in our main sessions. We haven't been able to do contested work as a group. So that's been a challenge for a first year coach trying to implement a game plan. So we've had to be really inventive in the classroom and try and involve our players in the learning process in the classroom, and feel like our players have adapted, but it's probably taken a little bit longer than it would in a normal year.
Justin, has there been a moment or a game this year where you thought, yep, my players are getting what I'm asking from them? I think that it's starting to resonate. Has there been a game or a moment?
Well, yeah, to be honest, I think there's been moments in every game where we've executed our style of play. I think the frustration early in the year was our consistency. And we'll just have lapses, and it was mainly back to the contest. We'd have lapses where we'd get beaten in the contest quite badly, and our game would fall apart to some degree, and opposition teams would score heavily in those periods where we lost control of the game. Now, I think back to the St Kilda first quarter where we coughed up seven goals. Even the Gold Coast game, I think we coughed up four goals in 116 seconds. So we had moments in games where it was costing us on the scoreboard heavily. The second and third quarter against St Kilda was
probably our best half of the year. And that gave the players a lot of confidence out of that game. And I think we ended up playing some pretty good footy for the next couple of months after that. So, there's been moments every game, Whitey, but just that consistency to be able to execute it under pressure when the opposition was on top, that's what really hurt us early in the year.
What a courageous win it was last night against St Kilda. Too good, the Eagles, in a very, very impressive performance, as Luke Darcy was telling us on Channel 7 last night. Brent Harvey would have been watching it all unfold, going, how tough are these blokes? This is so reminiscent of the 90s with the Kangas, how tough they were. The champ, the all-time games record holder, joins us on the Friday Footy Preview. Good morning, Boomer.
And good morning, boys. Yes, I was tuning in last night half. I did watch it, and I thought exactly the same. What a fantastic win by the Eagles, considering one of their key defenders goes down in McGovern, which is going to be pretty big in the scheme of things, see if he can get back before the end of the final series anyway. And you play one short. West Coast haven't been winning away from home in that hub, as we've seen early on in the year in the last couple of weeks. So a very impressive win. But you know what? Credit to the Saints as well. They came back and gave themselves a crack as well.
How will they be feeling, though, this morning, the Saints, Boomer, in your eyes? Like, they're still hanging on to a spot in the eight at the moment. 4 weeks ago, 6 weeks ago, well, 6 games ago, let's talk in games, it was just about a lock. They were on fire. It was all over. Now they've left themselves in a very vulnerable position.
Yeah, they have. And unfortunately for the Saints, you lose a game like that that's winnable. You go back and in your own mind as a player, you start thinking, oh, what about that game? We only lost by 3 points and we're up by 4 goals. And you start reminiscing about the past. So they need to rely on a few teams to lose now. And that's not a great position to be in for them to finish in the top eight. I still think they will. I've had a look at the draw and I think St Kilda still scrape in, no worries. But it's an opportunity that's missed, isn't it?
Boomer, are you sure?
No, they get in. They get in, Rama. They get in. Who takes their spot?
Well, I think the Bulldogs can take their spot comfortably.
Yeah, they can, but they're still sitting sixth. Bulldogs are ninth. Who else is going to come in? Melbourne or Carlton?
Baggers.
GWS.
Yeah, well, they're eighth at the minute, though.
Yeah, Kilda can go out.
Yeah, but we're talking finals. We're not talking finish top six, are we? Oh, I think they make the finals, no worries. They got the Giants next week. That's a huge game in the scheme of things, but it still means the Bulldogs have got to win, Melbourne have got to win, Collingwood have got to continue to win. So they are relying on teams around them to lose, no doubt about it, but I still think that they make the top eight.
If St Kilda lose their final game against GWS, they're vulnerable.
Yes, they are vulnerable, but I still think they make the top eight.
Mate, he's not going to change his mind,
totally.
Right?
No, I agree totally with you. Who have the Bulldogs got? Bulldogs have got Hawthorn and Fremantle, so you say that they win both of them. GWS beat St Kilda. Collingwood, Gold Coast, and Port. Yeah, you're right. It's a great position. But unfortunately for them, this is when you look back as a player, Ramo, and you've been there, Half. You know exactly what it's like. It's like this in local football as well. You look back and you go, what about that game? Well, 5 goals up and we end up losing by 8 points. It kills you because you know if you won that, the next game doesn't really mean anything. You're playing in the finals. So they're the ones that come back and bite you on the backside.
One thing that might help St Kilda is their percentage. So currently the Saints' percentage is 111.4, and that's 10% better than both the Bulldogs and the Giants. So it might actually come down to the fact that St Kilda and, say, the Giants might finish on the same amount of points, but St Kilda's percentage might be a little bit better. It's guesswork, really, from here. But Collingwood's not safe. That's one thing that's for certain.
And that's good for business.
Who have the Pies got? They've got Gold Coast and Port. So they've got to win this week, because you'd think that Port would beat them in the last round. So they've got to win this week. And the Giants have got Melbourne. If Melbourne end up beating the Giants, well, St Kilda make it, don't they?
Well, we'll talk about those games very shortly. But before we do that, now, some announcements yesterday in terms of retirements. Matty Cruiser and Bryce Gibbs, both number one picks in their respective years, but spent many years at the Blues, of course. Bryce, these last couple of years at Adelaide. And Northern Knights boy, your mate, Matty Cruiser. Boomer, another one from the factory, just making great names for themselves.
Yeah, I see Big Cruz around here. I actually seen him not too long ago before he went up to the hub. He mustn't live too far from me. And I see him up the local oval doing some running. You've got a feel for Big Matty because he's an exceptional player when he's up and running without injuries. Unfortunately, in his last 6 or 7 years, he's been smacked with injuries. And that's due to his style of play, I guess, that crash and bash and jumping in the ruck all the time. And we know he's had some problems with feet and ankles. So you feel for the big fella, because I think he still had a little bit of football left in him if his body was right. And so important for Carlton as well. When he was playing well, Carlton were going well.
It's an interesting conversation, because Cruz, when he first was drafted, he played straight off the bat. And I think he played 70 or 80 odd games in a row early in his first couple of years. He didn't miss many games at all. But I wonder what effect that has had on him for later in his career. You know, and I'm not saying Carlton did anything wrong here, but I'm talking ruckman in general. Do we need to protect them more, you know, early in their career when they come in? I know Cruz is the number one pick, and you want to play him, and he's expected to play, but he's still a ruckman. And coming up against those bigger bodies early in your career can have a massive adverse effect later on.
Well, he made his debut in round 3 of his first year and then didn't miss a game for the next 2 seasons. So he played 43 matches in his first 2 years. And then when you look at his last 7, there was only twice where he managed over 20 games. So, you know, he finishes his career as a really good, solid player, but perhaps we really never saw the best of him because of his injuries.
He plays a little bit different to everyone. Like, I look at him versus maybe a Todd Goldstein. He does a lot of crash and bash work where he puts his head probably where it doesn't need to go sometimes in terms of bravery. So maybe that's come back and cost him. We've seen him have a few concussions along the way as well. So he's certainly got a different style of play to a lot of other ruckmans. And, you know, it's a shame, but he's a great fella. And you know what? He's had a great career, lasted in the system for a very long time. So good on him, and congratulations on a great career.
Well, Huff, you think about Cochin and also Cruiser, both played Northern Knights, both were teammates, and they both were in the same draft. Trent Cochin's played 245 games, and Matthew Cruiser's played 189 games from that same draft. So, you know, there's almost 3 seasons lost just comparing two players. And, you know, Trent has missed a fair bit of footy over the last couple of years himself.
Yep, that's right. And Bryce Gibbs gets to play on the weekend against the Blues to farewell his AFL career. We'll talk about that shortly, which is nice.
Yeah, it's a very nice thing to do by the Crows.
A nice thing to do. Let's get to the game tonight, though. Let's focus on that for a bit, because that's the one we've all wanted to see for quite some time. Geelong and Richmond. It's going to be an absolute cracker at Metricon Stadium tonight. 2 changes for the Cats. Radigalia and Tui come in for Jenkins and Zach Guthrie. And for the Tigers, Dylan Grimes is back. Jack Ross, Kane Lambert comes back in as well for Higgins, Broad, and Down. Nathan Broad omitted. Interesting. Zach Tui will play finally his 200th game after missing out as a late change last week. Boomer, first up for you. They're the premiership favourites, these two teams. We know Richmond have got the job done the last couple of years, but there's been some sort of show of force from the Cats all year long. Who's got the advantage, do you think? Very different styles. Who's got the advantage in this game coming into tonight's clash?
Yeah, this one's going to be a ripper. And as you mentioned, Half, is it a grand final? What do you call it? A prelay, maybe. Preview? A prelay. A preview. And look, they have got contrasting styles. And I think it's fantastic to see that it's going to be played on a completely different ground up at Metricon, because this is where the final is going to be played, away from the MCG, with these two teams, or Geelong down at GM HBA Stadium, obviously, and Richmond at the MCG. So it's at a venue where they're not going to be, or they've never played each other there. So I think it's great. Geelong are coming off a 5-day break. Now, I don't know, or I haven't looked over Rammer or Whitey. You might be able to help me here, but I haven't really looked over the fixture where the teams have had a bye and how they've bounced back. But 5-day break to Richmond's a 9-day break, that has to play some part in it this time of year, I would think, with the bodies playing every, you know, pretty much twice a week. Geelong, we've mentioned the last couple of weeks at the contrasting style that they play now, where they chip the ball around and they've got one of the highest uncontested marks in the competition. But when they get forward to centre, they're not reluctant anymore to go forward to Tom Hawkins. He is the best forward in the competition at the minute. He's in great form, and it's great to see. So it'll be interesting to see if Richmond get a number back to help Grimes out, or whoever plays on him. Or Bolt will probably get the job on him because he's a bigger body. But it'll be interesting to see if Grimes comes off and does help, especially now that Broad could be that one that comes off, and but he's now omitted. So it's going to be very, very interesting. The ramifications of this game is the top four finish. Whoever finishes on top of the other person, it looks like at this stage. But Whitey or Rammer again, does this matter? Does the top four position matter now where you finish in the top four? Because there's no home ground advantage. They're not playing anyone at the MCG.
Well, it still matters because you get the second chance, obviously. So I think it's, you know, there's still the reward.
Well, you get the
there
second
for finishing
chance.
Top four.
Yeah, sorry, just the position in the top four, Rammer. Does it matter if you finish first, second, third, or fourth now?
No, I don't.
What do you do? You wear your home shorts and your home jumper. That's about it, isn't it? And probably get the home rooms. That doesn't matter.
That's about it. This is an interesting game tonight because Boomer makes a really good point about Geelong. They like to possess the ball, obviously, but Richmond love to force the turnover. So Richmond are going to bait them a bit tonight. So Geelong need to attack. When they've attacked this year is when they've looked their best. So taking the ball forward at speed and putting a lot of pressure on Richmond's defence. If Geelong want to chip the ball around tonight and try to overpossess the football, I think that plays into Richmond's hands. They've got a clear advantage at stoppages, Geelong. They're one of the better teams around stoppages, albeit they've never really had a dominant ruckman at any stage through the season, but they get a clear advantage there. So taking the ball away from contest quickly, and rather than going sideways, backwards, inside, outside, whatever they want to do the football, drive it long. Lock it in your forward half. Geelong need to play the game today tonight in their forward half. When Richmond beat them last year in that prelim final, Geelong were all over him in the first half. Attack, attack, attack. Second half, when Geelong started to play cute, the game then turned. The game was then played on Richmond's terms. The Richmond want to play a turnover game. They love to attack from half back with that rebound and bounce that they get from those players. Hawley back in. Markoff is probably the one that's taken a broad spot at the moment. They like his running and carrying speed off half back. Liam Baker's another one off half back. So Geelong need to get the ball and drive it deep and really make Richmond's defenders actually defend for once.
In that preliminary final last year, Geelong led by 21 points at halftime. They probably should have been further in front, to be honest, in that prelim final. But the game was played on its terms, and, yeah, they got safe in the second half and could only manage two goals to Richmond's eight after half-time, and obviously the Tigers got it on their terms. I think going into this game, Boomer, Geelong has got the better form, but I think we're thinking that Richmond might be starting to build. And I think the other element in this match is the weather. There is 20 mils of rain expected to fall on the Gold Coast today. Most of that's meant to fall before the game starts. But if it's wet, you can't help but think that that suits the Tigers with their game style, that surge football.
Yeah, the surge football certainly will favour Richmond in that aspect. Rammer, it's interesting because the weather plays a part in this as well. I've seen a template, and I think it might have been Ross Lyon when he was coaching Fremantle to maintain possession against Richmond, and Richmond can't get their hands on the football. But as you mentioned, that's what Richmond want now. They've changed their game slightly, so they say, rightio, kick it there, and as soon as there's a turnover, that surge football comes into it. So it's going to be really interesting, and the battle of playing the game in Geelong's forward half. Geelong are starting to build something here with those smalls. They're not Gary Ablett's where they're offensive players. You've got Atkins, Dalhouse, Myers. I know Myers has kicked goals, but Dalhouse and Atkins haven't really hit the scoreboard on multiple occasions. They're more there for their pressure. So have they got the ability to keep the ball locked in their forward line, get the repeat inside 50s, and then put the scoreboard pressure on the Tigers? So it's going to be a really interesting game. It's great that these two teams are playing with a couple of weeks to go before the final, so we can actually see what we think is going to happen during the finals.
Who wins, Boomer?
I think Geelong are in the better form. Richmond are getting their mojo together right now, but I think the Cats can win this one just.
Rammer?
Cats.
Whitey?
Yeah, I'm with Geelong because I think their form's stronger and it's almost been bulletproof, but I am worried about the weather as a Geelong selection, and I do think it's interesting that Joel Selwood hasn't been selected again. The feeling was he was going to play two games ago.
It's a real Neil Balm areas for Geelong at the moment. Just two weeks for Joel Selwood. I'm on the Cats as well, but yeah, quite rightly worried about the weather and how good Richmond are in those conditions. But it's going to be a cracker, I think.
That was the best of the Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.